Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
I think the thing that I'm hearing most often at the moment is I don't understand how this cuts work.
Is AI really making us more productive at work?
From the end of last year, they said that 50% of Brits resist AI and are worried about it.
Do we need to be worried about AI taking our jobs?
You just feel like you're being chased by a tiger all the time. Like, you're never ahead enough.
And can AI make the Village Panto even better?
The King in AI, it's called.
And
it's
no!
That's good.
Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, your Monday edition.
Whoop, whoop.
My name is George Butler, AI novice.
Yeah, and me, James Chandler, tech expert, AI enthusiast.
Oh, that again. Yeah. This is the podcast where we are untangling the wild world of AI.
Isn't it wild?
It really is. And it feels like almost as every week passes, it gets more and more wild. I mean, Friday, talking about Elon Musk's sperm. I mean, I did not sign up for
it
that.
It took a new fork in the road on Friday, didn't it?
That took an AI twist I was not expecting. It was quite extraordinary. That court case is the gift that keeps on giving to this podcast.
Indeed.
But this episode is not about the news. It's not about listener questions. It is all about a brilliant guest, Christine Armstrong, who is on the way, one of the world leading thinkers when it comes to the workforce and hybrid working and burnout and productivity. And of course, we want to speak to Christine about the impact that AI is having in that space. James. Before we get to Christine, we did something on the show on Friday where a new thing that we're going to do, we're going to stress test AI because I got a bit of inspiration from the new series of Amandaland.
Right, yes.
Which is hilarious. Yep. And in the show, AI is kind of used as a bit of a companion to help with real life issues, everyday problems. So I think we need to sort of do a bit of an advice ranker, and we need to see if AI is up to the test of helping the nation's lives.
Got it. Okay.
So we're gonna see if LLMs have got what it takes.
I hope so.
Seeing as we're chatting to Christine, we thought we would ask ChatGPT about something which many people all across the UK and the world are concerned about, and that is AI taking their jobs and the negative impact that is having on people. So we asked ChatGPT if it's got any advice for how we can make sure that people are less worried and actually quite motivated at work despite the risk of AI taking their jobs. Let's take a listen to what it had to say.
Try to frame AI as a tool that changes jobs more than replaces people entirely. Most people feel less anxious when they understand how they still add value. Judgment, relationships, creativity, context, and decision-making are still very human strengths. Be transparent about what AI is and isn't being used for. Involve the team in learning it, and focus on upskilling rather than replacement. Fear grows in uncertainty, so regular honest communication and giving people a sense of control usually helps motivation a lot.
What are we thinking?
I think it's a bit like asking the school bully, how do you convince people not to be scared of you so you can bully them some more?
Yeah, no, it is really. It's a bit of a classic LLMism.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it kind of just sort of tells you something that you might want to hear without actually telling you anything useful.
I wonder if we're going to get anything profound out of it. Maybe we've got to ask it to be sort of, you know, don't say the usual platitudes. Getting something a bit more profound and different. Are your team really worried about AI?
No. Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you can't not read stories in the news about AI job losses, especially in big tech. It seems to be very prevalent in big tech. But also we are hearing a lot about, oh my goodness, is AI going to have an impact on our jobs? Now, the flip side to that is I think AI is changing our jobs slightly. I think we are all using it as a bit of a tool to do things better or differently. I don't think that's making us work any less. In fact, it might be increasing our workload. But no, I don't know if the average person has an existential fear, but I think it's something everybody is thinking about. What impact is it going to have? How is it going to change the way we work in our world and what it means for the teams that we work in? But it's a universal issue, isn't it, really, right now?
And I think the world is a pretty uncertain place at the moment, and AI doesn't bring much certainty in that sense that it's moving really, really fast and human nature is we don't like things that change and move very fast and light speed. Dominating the news agenda, we probably feel a little bit powerless, or we don't have control over this thing as well. There's some sort of big people making, you know, big decisions about, you know, what's what. And like any new technology, I think you're sort of looking around you, over your shoulder, people sat next to you, are they using it better than me? And so I think there is this sort of constant inherent tension inside of people, which you're right, maybe it isn't fear, but am I keeping up? Am I using the right things? Is, you know, is someone doing it better than I am? Am I going to get found out? Does it? Am I cheating by using it in this way? This sort of constant thing that's going on, which perhaps before AI we didn't have so much.
Maybe, but also maybe we did. Maybe we've always been a bit like, are they doing the job better than I am? Like, should I be using the searching Google for this
replying to emails at 9 o'clock at night because someone else did? Yeah, maybe.
So maybe it's the next evolution of that. Yeah. That's not necessarily helpful. You know what? It would be really helpful to have an expert who could unpick this
on work
work. And it'd be great if there was someone available for this very podcast. Oh yeah, there is. Christine Armstrong. Now, I should say before we welcome Christine, if you have an AI conundrum that you would like us to stress test on this show and put the LLMs to the test, then tell us at aihaveanaclue@gmail.com if your conundrum is asked. You will win this.
You get an AI having a clue.
Okay, it is time now to welcome our guest today, someone who has spent years helping people understand the future of work. Christine Armstrong is a researcher, a speaker, an author who specializes in the collision between work and life, from hybrid working to burnout to productivity to talent retention and how we adapt to massive cultural and technological shifts, well, like AI.
Indeed. She has experienced firsthand how traditional career structures often fail working parents. She rebuilt her own career. She actually went on to write an amazing book called The Mother of All Jobs. And from that became one of the leading voices in analysing the trends that shape the future of work. I've seen her speak a lot of times. She's done a lot of things for us at the IAB. Her vlog that she does on LinkedIn is phenomenal, and I highly recommend. AI is, of course, this thing that she's bumping into all of the time in all of the research that she's conducting. How can we adapt without losing ourselves in the process is the key question. Welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, Christine.
Christine, thank you so much for joining us on AI Haven't a Clue. This is a fascinating area to cover, probably one which comes up maybe more than anything else on our show, and I suppose in kind of media headlines and day-to-day conversation around AI. So it's going to be really interesting to pick your brains all about it. Before we get into all things AI, can you kind of step back a few years before this whole AI thing came about and tell us about your work in this space, kind of your career and some of the things you've been doing. And then we'll get into how AI is changing everything.
Okay. So I used to work in ad agencies, but I worked in comms, and I somehow accidentally ended up doing insight and research for the planning team and doing insight pieces into big trends like people's relationship with phones and generational change and stuff. And then I'd get sent out to present it to clients all over the place. And I was really shit at presenting. So I got better quite quickly because it's very painful to be bad at presenting and people looking at you like, get this bloody woman off the
plate. James knows that. Trust me, Christine.
Anyway, so I did that for a while. And then I went and worked for a research agency, WPP. Not my finest hour, wasn't really my thing. And I had a baby, partly to escape. And then another one really quickly. And then that was pretty miserable. So I wrote a book and kind of came back from that. Co-founded an agency and started. I had that CIPD was a client for a long time, so I'm doing a lot of research into what's going on in the world of work, what people are into, what they're not. So now I look at the data, interview people, try and put it together, help people make a bit of sense of it.
What are people saying about AI on the whole? Is it this big transformational, amazing thing that's happening? Are people terrified by it? I mean, what are you kind of hearing when you're talking to leaders, HR people, all that sort of stuff?
Well, I think it's a bit of a muddle, isn't it? I think on the one hand, people are being promised, you know, unicorns, rainbows and magic. And on the other end, their printer doesn't work. And they don't quite know where between those two points reality should sit. And so most people are really, really confused. I think the thing that I'm hearing most often at the moment is I don't understand how this cuts work. Because, for instance, I did some work recently with a local authority, and they would just, you know, as an example, they said, you know, say somebody's council flat floods, right? We used to, somebody call the council and say, my flat's flooded, could you send over a plumber? And eventually we'd get around to it. And now they send us a really, really long email written in chat or Claude or whatever that states, you know, their rights under the Housing Act of 1968 and all their entitlements, blah, 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 blah. We can't just not respond to it. So then we have to get someone to respond, but we can't respond in an AI. So we've got to get a lawyer to respond. And then when we responded, they send us another message and then we get into the... And nobody's sorted out the leak, have they? Nobody's been over and given Mrs. Smith a cup of tea and said, I'm really sorry about the leak, should return the water off. So it's like generating all of this work. I heard a really great description for it today, which is the verification gap is another big problem. You get all this stuff back and it looks great. At first glance, you're like, oh, this looks smart. Oh, marvellous. Yeah, great. I'm going to look super clever. And then you start reading it, you're like, oh, really? Oh, is that right? Oh, and it takes you ages to unpick it. So I think people are genuinely quite unsure. I'm sure you saw the really good research from Nick Bloom. He's a Brit in Stanford. And he did this lovely big study recently. They interviewed 6,000 chief execs, UK, Germany, France, Australia, US. And of the people they interviewed, chief execs, CFOs, and nearly 70% said they used an AI once a week for an hour or less. And 28% had never knowingly used any AI.
Wow.
But they were expecting it to cut the workforce by between 2 and 3%. When they asked employees at those organisations, who many of whom said they were like being force-fed AI, they said they expected to increase employment because they're seeing all this work being generated. So I think that there is genuinely a lot of confusion at the moment.
What's your take on where we are? Is AI making us more productive at work? Are we on the road to becoming more productive at work through AI in the future? Or is it going to absolutely take us into a place where we're spiraling and we're doing, and it, you know, it's actually a hindrance rather than a help?
So my guess, and it is a guess and everyone, you know, is trying to guess, is that it will be neither as brilliant or as terrible as we think. I mean, I am a really, really bad driver, okay? And I have been waiting for a self-driving car to be parked on my driveway. For the last 25 years. I've been promised it in the next 5 years, every year since I promised passed my test when I was 17. And it feels a little bit like the same with AI. It's like, it's always a bit a step ahead. A lot of what it does useful things now. You know, you summarize a call and you can get this and that. It's not perfect, but it's good. You know, doing research really helpful. I find it's most useful in your personal life. You know, you want to know what to buy someone's five-year-old. It's brilliant at stuff like that, isn't it? Really practical things. I think in work, some people have, you know, clocked things that are really useful and that will continue. I think the agents are yet to be proven. I saw Hannah Fry interview someone who said they should be called delegates, not agents, because you don't really want them to make decisions. You want them to do what the task that you don't want to do, which I thought was a really good point. I think we're finding a way through. The employees that I talked to at the moment are very hesitant. I don't know if you saw the Edelman data from the end of last year. They said that 50% of Brits resist AI and are worried about it. So I think we've got, I think some of the messaging from some of the tech leaders around the cuts to jobs and what it could do and some of the threat has backfired, actually, because now people are understandably really wary about it. And so we're seeing a division in the workforce. Some people enjoying it, really fascinated, a bit techie. A lot of people like, let's just see, shall we?
What about you and how you use it? I mean, you create content, you write lots, you present lots. I mean, is AI sort of useful in that sphere for you? Is it summarizing stuff? Is it making your life easier?
I think it's that verification gap. So what I'll do is I record most of my briefing calls now. So if I'm doing a talk to someone and they're like, right, this is the audience, this is what they're into, this is our key issues, blah, blah, blah. I record that and it's the recording itself is the most useful thing because when you come to do it 3 months later, you can replay what they've said, read the transcript. What I'll often then do is pop it into chat if it's not confidential and trying to go, right, so what were the key points? And I'd say, it's never good enough just to paste that into a message saying this is what we've agreed. It never gets it right. 100%. It gets 60%, but that verification gap's quite significant tonally, but also in terms of what matters. So I think it's not a perfect tool. I do have somebody in my team who's set up on those little, you know, things that speaks in my voice. And sometimes it is a bit uncanny in written work. And sometimes I do read things and go, shit, did I write that? You know, it has its moments, doesn't it?
We had a Dr. Lauren Ingram on our podcast last week, and we were talking a little bit about the kind of the gender gap in AI. When you're speaking to people about how they use AI at work or even out of work, are you seeing a kind of a different pattern emerge between the men and the women?
I haven't personally seen that. In fact, some of the people that I know who are most enthusiastic about AI are women. I don't see that at scale. I read about it. I've seen some of the data. So I think it is one to really watch out. I'm loving what Hannah Fry's doing. I think she's great. Mm-hmm. She's doing really interesting content. I don't know if you saw her piece about creating her own agent, as she just put on YouTube. It's fantastic. So create an agent, I just see it called Cassie, who goes bonkers, gives away her passwords and runs up credit card bills. But it's really real. And I think representations, people doing stuff like that, is very helpful.
Going back just a few seconds to when you said some of the people who are most excited about AI are the females that you've been talking to about it. What have they been excited about? Is there anything in common that is coming out of the responses from when you're speaking to people?
I think people who are very into data analysis, I think when it's in numbers, people are getting better responses perhaps than when it's in written stuff. So when it's analysing big data sets, I think things like that. I think some of the more technical coding stuff people are very excited about. I think when it gets into things that are more nuanced, so I was talking to somebody who runs a healthcare agency and they're comparing different research reports into different treatment paths and comparing them under pressure to use AI, but just having so much problems with, you know, that black box. It goes into a black box, it comes out the other side, you don't quite know what it's done and it's not quite right, and the effort and stress of trying to work out where it's not quite right is high. So I think a lot of this stuff is very much work in progress, and I think the challenge is where the messaging coming out, that if you're not already ahead, you're behind. Somebody at an event I was at last week described it, you just feel like you're being chased by a tiger all the time, like you're never ahead enough and you can't keep up, and that makes it quite stressful. I think other people just go, oh God, I'm just not dealing with this. Like, call me when it works properly. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
We talked loads just after lockdown, where you had this marvelous matrix on hybrid working and in office and all the various flavors in between. Do you think AI has made any of that easier? The kind of the working from home, the hybrid thing, or not?
So I was talking today to two lovely, lovely researchers who are based in Amsterdam, and they've just done this lovely piece of research in an ad agency, ethnographic, watching how people use AI and how it changes how they work. Really, really fascinating. And it's the first thing that I've seen that's like a really specific case study in an agency. And they were doing screen grabs and talking to all of the team. And what they found was what they call process collapse. So the process just got much, much shorter because one person, instead of having to go to a designer and a photographer and somebody else to mock up this and do some research, could kind of compress all of that. One person could get a lot out quite quickly, get mockups, get designs, get feedback. But there were a couple of problems with it. One was that clients get bought in really early and the depth of thinking hasn't necessarily been done. So the client's presented with something which looks almost like a campaign. That looks really great. When you then come to do it, you're like, oh, is it totally working? And it's difficult to pull it back. So that was one of the problems. One of the problems, people tend to work on their own. So rather than having two creatives battling it out, it hasn't necessarily had some of that robust contact. And they were saying that actually some of the judgment calls are more sophisticated. So if you don't have a particularly high aesthetic judgment, it looks fine. But if you do, then you're like, this is off, the messaging's off, and so on. They had this brilliant case study. They had a campaign that was, they wanted to be set in Scandinavia. So they flew the whole team out there, shot it in Scandinavia, got it back and went, he doesn't really look Scandinavian enough. Let's just use an AI. The world isn't enough. You know, Scandinavia isn't Scandinavian enough in an AI created world. Mm. So I just think all of the unintended consequences are really fascinating.
I know you've talked and looked into the topic of burnout quite a lot, which is something which I think, especially over the last 5 years, we are talking a bit more about in the workplace, and people are, you know, we live in a world where we've constantly got the world in our hands when our phone is there, and we can't really turn work off like we used to be able to turn work off. And we've all talked about it and heard sessions about it and, you know, listened about that topic before. Now, is AI going to change any of that? Is the fact that we have a tool to make things a little bit easier, is that going to help us with our work-life balance? Or is that actually the opposite, in which we're going to be having to do so much more and be on top of absolutely everything, and we've got an agent running our life? Is it actually going to go the opposite way, and you think we're going to be even more in a kind of a situation where people are getting burnt out?
So there's a psychologist, and James, you've heard me mention him before, called Dr. Bill Mitchell, and he talks about things that give us energy that are good for us regulating our stress levels, and, you know, how calm and in control we feel versus things that are bad for it. And the things that are good for it are connections with people, conversations, going outside, walk, drink some exercise. We're not going to get those things from AI, are we? And in fact, the emerging research seems to be that people have fewer conversations. So instead of going to say to James, oh, I didn't know anything about blah, blah, blah that you just mentioned to me, I could just put it into my AI of choice and get an answer. And whether that's exactly what you intended or not, we'll never know. Because instead of me saying, oh, I don't know anything about that, tell me about it, we haven't had that conversation. And so I think that there's a risk that it breaks those links. And that was what I was thinking if I was listening to that advertising agency example. Like, the joy and the creative process, magic of creating something, really comes from some of that robust interaction. And in the research I'm doing at the moment, a lot of what I'm hearing is that the robustness of conversations at work for a lot of people has reduced. People feel they can't say stuff. They're worried about mental health. They're worried about saying the wrong thing that's not the right thing to say. And a lot of people are saying, oh, it's better just to say nothing. And I think in a world where we don't connect with people at work, we don't have friends at work in the same way, we may see more burnout, and particularly with concerns about the job market and whether your job's going to be taken by an AI. So I think, yes, in theory, but in reality, we've got to find some human connection to go alongside it. And I don't think we've really thought that through yet.
Do you see any obvious issues, problems, barriers in work that AI could solve for that it isn't already doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's a question I ask other people, James. So it's a bit annoying that you've asked me. When I guarantee a lawyer or whatever, I go, so talk me through it. Like, tell me, if an AI replaced you, or if somebody's saying they're going to replace you, how does that actually work? So say my neighbour decides they're going to sue me because my wall's fallen, our wall's fallen down, they think it's my fault. What's the first thing I'm going to do? Well, I might put it into an AI initially. Do they have any case at all? But if it's really stressful, I don't want to talk to someone. And it's the same with all this medical stuff. It's like, well, if my kid's actually broken their leg, I don't want to talk to someone. It might be that the robot actually does it, but I still want somebody to be nice to my kid and tell me it's going to be all right and wheel the trolley through. Somewhere. So I really struggle to think of end-to-end stuff. I mean, software development, you know, technical things, sure, maybe. But I don't know. I struggle to think of a process that is entirely better through no human interaction. But maybe that's just a failure of my imagination. I'm still waiting for the driverless car. That's where I want it.
Me too. When you've been speaking to all these people though, Christine,
yeah,
have you come across anything where you've just thought, oh, that's rubbish, you're doing that wrong, or you're barking up the wrong tree here, or focusing on the wrong thing?
I think the messaging around getting rid of people is focusing on the wrong thing. I just think even if it is a consequence in some cases, I think it's poorly thought through in terms of people's likeliness to engage with it. And also in terms of intention, the idea that universal basic income would be appealing in a world where people are defined by their jobs. Even when they retire, somebody who's a retired teacher is still a teacher. It's still a part of their definition. I don't think stripping people of their purpose, of the thing that they are interested in, if they are interested in their job or the thing they've trained for, I don't think that's ever going to be a positive. So the big error I see is the way that this whole thing has been sold, and I say sold in inverted commas.
While we have you, we always play a game on the podcast with our favourite guests, ChatGPT Roulette. The rules are very, very simple. It could be chat, it could be your LLM of choice. The only rule is there's no cheating, George. You go into your LLM and we're all going to share. Ladies and gentlemen, George Butler, would you like to kick things off?
I will caveat this, Christine, by saying typically James and I, when we play this game, have the most boring responses ever. And our guests come on and they are just so much, you know, they're just a lot more interesting, basically. Yeah. We're boring people is essentially what I'm trying to say here.
It's a good safety net for what you're probably about to say. What is it that what have you put in?
I asked it for...
It looks like you're searching through the list, George. Tell us what you put in.
It's just really boring. And you... you've called me out on this for a few times on this topic, so I know what you're going to say. But
cooking,
no,
salmon.
I've asked it. I asked it for the sunset times of a town in Portugal in September.
I mean, that's a bit mic drop, isn't it? That's like, going to Portugal.
But it's really good at stuff like that. That is the stuff that it's really brilliant at, isn't it?
It's like a good search engine. But again, a boring response. James, I bet yours is even more dull.
I asked who at Wokingham Borough Council should I email about getting some hedges cut back on a public.
Oh, sorry. Well, you just all fell asleep there listening to that.
You send them a really long email that they have to get over to. Like 3 pages of legalese.
Write me the longest, most direct email possible to get the required outcome. Christine,
show us up.
You
please.
Can better these
show
two.
Us up.
This has to come with a confession, which is that I have agreed / been appointed to write the village pantomime, which is called...
Fantastic. What?
Oh, no, you haven't.
The King in AI, it's called. And it's...
No!
The King having an AI chip in his brain, which turns him into a farting megalomaniac. Anyway, I've been trying to get it to rewrite the words. You know, in Hamilton, when he sings You'll Be Back, you know, the King comes in and it's such a dramatic song and the audience calls back. I've been trying to get it to rewrite that so that I can start my panto with it. And it is bloody shit at it. It's so rubbish.
Is it?
Give us some of the lyrics. Just give us a little flavour of the lyrics. Feel free to sing it if you'd like.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an adventure, but it just doesn't scan, so it doesn't work. And it says it can't do it. When I asked it, it said, no, I don't really know how to do that. So I was disappointed. So here we go. Here's some of the lyrics. When I left, you were all grieving. Now my brain has had improving. Tiny chip inside my skull made my every thought more dull. Brilliant, I mean brilliant. Now I rule with geniuses. Every problem's clear. Everyone should live in fear. It just doesn't go with the music. No. So.
And it doesn't talk anything about farting.
It's got work to do. I've had to send it to a person.
Oh, lyricists, fear not. Your job is safe now.
If anybody who's listening to the podcast would like to have a go at it, please bring it on. The plot is that IBM's headquarters is where I live in the village. It's sort of on the edge of it. So it turns out the only place in the country that can remove the chip safely is IBM. So he's got to get to our village. We've got to get him here. And all the clubs, the cycling, the dog club, the running club, are all going to help. And then they've got to get him over to your IBM.
Question for you, Christine. Is the King character, is a bit like in Hamilton, is a bit of like a bumbling fool of a king?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've thought about casting.
Okay, who are you thinking?
James Chandler.
Look at me in that way.
He'd be good. I promise he's free.
Let's take it offline. Good. That's such a shame.
You'd be good. So let's keep that in mind. But Christine, great ChatGPT roulette. Thank you for showing us up, like all of our guests do. But that was brilliant. Before we let you go, we do want to do a little bit of future gazing. We want to have a look into the workplace in, let's say, 10 years' time. What impact would you like to see AI has had? You know, if we could shape a more positive workplace by channeling the virtues of AI, how would that look? And equally, is there anything that you're a bit worried about?
I think it would genuinely be brilliant if AI could make our tech stacks work. I mean, I want to go not too ambitious here, but the amount of organisations I speak to who say our ordering system doesn't match our production system. So I think we should be really realistic. So if it could smooth out your tech, like imagine you could go into either Teams or Zoom or Google or Riverside and any of them would just work. It would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Imagine that. I mean, I don't think we need to be as ambitious as we are. The question that I always ask with AI is, does it get in the way of our relationships, whether that's with our colleagues or with our customers or clients or whatever, or does it improve them? So everything that might improve them would be great.
Any fears, any concerns, any kind of issues you might see sprouting up?
World War III, although Trump seems quite busy with that right now. You know, the drones seem a problem to me. The killer drones seem a problem. I think I do genuinely have a concern about an authoritarian state using the data. So I have an electric car, which I really love. But obviously, every single time I go a mile over the speed limit, there is a record of that. And when you think about the transcription of everything, the transcription of this and every conversation that we have, actually, in an authoritarian regime, it would be pretty scary.
Well, we talk about wearables all the time. And there was something the other day we covered where you wear it around you wear it as like a necklace and it literally records your conversations all day long. There, that is, you know,
I've been wearing one for the whole episode.
No, you're
but
kidding.
If you commit a crime, your phone, your car, any transcriptions, every search that you've done, every chat search. I mean, you two are fine, but you know, I've got a psychotic kid. You know,
you're arrested for being boring.
You think the forensic? But I can't even be bothered to go through this guy's search. It's so
no,
dumb.
Thanks. No, thanks. What a wonderful way to end the conversation with world-renowned expert on the future of work, Christine Armstrong. Didn't think we'd get there. That was amazing,
Christine. Really appreciate your time, and I cannot wait to see your handiwork in pantomime with James Chandler on stage in, when was it? When can we watch this?
4th to 6th of February, The King and AI. It's going to be a thing.
Cannot wait.
That's a shame.
Oh, that was fun. I got you a job.
Don't tout me out playing some court jester in a blimmin' or mumbling king, whatever it was.
You've always wanted to be a king.
Wow. Oh, just...
A farting king.
It's unbelievable. It's base humour. I'm better than that.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, not again. Well, she was good though, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, very, good. Very good. Fantastic guest, Christine. I'm sorry. Love chatting with her. And so articulate, so interesting. And what a wild time for that to be your job.
And I think of all the things that she probably hears from people, all the intricacies of AI, all the acronyms, all of the fear that goes with it, I think her point is, we just want the printer to work. And I think that's a good analogy for everything. We just want the basics before we get carried away with all this other stuff. Phenomenal.
It's a great point. Real pleasure having Christine on the show. And I cannot wait to see you star in her fantastic
pantomime. Not going to happen.
Oh, yes, it is. And on that note, we're going to say goodbye. We're back, of course, on Friday with all the latest news from the world of AI. But for now, thanks so much for joining us, especially if this is your second time in just a few days. Honestly, I'm sick of James. I don't know about you. but for now, thanks for listening. Thanks to Team AI, Haven't a Clue, and our fantastic producer, Molly Carter, and James. We should say at the end of the show the thing we always say.
Yeah. What? Stay curious.
Oh, yeah.